Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
It is Sunday morning. It is not Rick Moore. This is Sean McCord, your monthly substitute host for our weekly wake-up call. And I'm sitting here with Jody Kilbasa. Jody, good morning.
Good morning.
Jody's been a longtime friend of the show. Jody, you've been coming here at least once a year, sometimes twice a year since 2009. We have you on regularly to talk about the Virginia Film Festival. You've come on the past to talk about the Oscars. You've just been a great friend of the show and a good friend of me, but specifically a great friend of the show. So I thought it was only fair to have you on in between film festivals and in between Oscar seasons to come on and talk a little bit about you, about your career in the arts and what you've brought to Charlottesville. So thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, and it's always a pleasure to be on the show and obviously to catch up and chat with you as well.
So my one of those Facebook memories popped up on my feed this morning, and it reminded me that it was 7 years ago, May 2009, that it was first announced that you were coming here as director of the Virginia Film Festival.
That's right. This is the seven-year anniversary this month, in fact, of my arriving in Charlottesville, which has been a tremendous privilege to be in this beautiful community and to work at the University of Virginia, and just really, really great for me personally at this point in my life and my career. We moved here, my wife Helen and I, with our three young children, mm-hmm. and to resettle here in Charlottesville, it's been just extraordinary for all of us to live here and be a part of the community. And I remember when I came here in 2009, I talked truthfully, very humbly about wanting to become part of the community, that I couldn't expect that my first year here in Charlottesville that I was part of the community. I would have to earn that. And I hope that I have. I feel very much a part of this community. I love living here. Our family loves it here. And, this will be my 8th Virginia Film Festival.
Right.
Coming up, which runs this year, November 3rd through the 6th.
Oh, and please, by all means, plug.
I've had great fun doing it every year. It's grown, I would say, exponentially in the last 7 years, almost doubled in size, and attendance has certainly doubled in size, and the number of films now is up to nearly 140, give or take, every year, from about 60 or so when I first started. All that's been great. I mean, we have more people attending the festival, more people excited about it every year, more engagement with our community, with social service organizations and other cultural organizations in the community, and hopefully a much greater positive impact on our community as well. And I also will say that, during this time, I've been fortunate enough that I was appointed to be vice provost for the arts at the University of Virginia. And as a result, what a personal boon and privilege for me in my career to be able to expand my role in the arts, both at the university and through our community. It's something that I love. I'm very passionate about. I feel that the impact that the arts have on education, on just creating a richer cultural tapestry for all of us is really significant and really important. And it's great to see, as our community grows here in Charlottesville, that the arts become richer and more dynamic, engage more people, and create a better community for us.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that this has been personally rewarding for you, but I think it's also been rewarding for our community to have you here. To have you expand the arts in the way that you have. I remember when you were selected for vice provost of the arts a few years ago, I thought, man, that was a real coup. And what you've been able to do to expand the film festival year-round, I think there's an announcement that just came out about the film festival at the Stone Field.
Actually, we're at the Violet Crown.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yes.
See, There we go. I wanted to give you an opportunity.
So we're at the new Violet Crown Cinema. So we have a monthly film series that's going on,
right.
And it's been extraordinary. The first two films that we've screened have sold out. We have our third one coming up. Oh, gosh, I don't have the date in front of me, but, you know, go to our website, which is virginiafilmfestival.org. And we've also, again, as part of our sort of year-round Virginia Film Festival programming, we just launched a Moonlight movie series, and we just had its debut Friday night at the X Park with Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, yeah.
On June 3rd, I believe it is, we're going to be at Carter's Mountain.
I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah,
We're
screening the Lego Movie. So we're doing more sort of children, family-oriented films up at Carter's Mountain. We thought, what a beautiful venue to be up there on top of Carter's Mountain, overlooking Charlottesville with the the background of the Blue Ridge Mountains laying out in front of you there at sunset. Bring your family, throw the frisbee around, lay out a picnic blanket. This entire series is sponsored by Bold Rock Hard Cider. They have a shop there. But just fun. And we thought, well, let's get some families together. We're screening out at Carter Mountain. We're screening Lego Movie, the Peanuts Movie, and Hook.
Nice.
So three fun films for kids and families to come out and just enjoy the scenery. And, you know, I think there's something really great and communal about an outdoor film. It harkens back to that, you know, drive-in movie thing, except this time we don't have the exhaust running, which is great. And
the sound may be a little better.
Yeah, exactly. And a perfect, just idyllic pastoral setting in which to screen this in. And, I've seen this happen before where, families come out and the kids end up, throwing the frisbee and the ball around with mom and dad, and then playing chase and tag, and then settling down in their mom and dad's laps and watching the screening, which is a wonderful thing.
Or go a little early and pick some apples.
Well, I think it's going to be a little early for the apples,
June,
right?
But in the fall, we'll go pick some apples.
Exactly. I think they'd get upset if you pick their apples right now. but at any rate, really, really a lot of fun. Then at X Park, we opened this with Beetlejuice,
right.
And we had about, I'd say, about 350 people out on Friday night. And I think a lot of people were just pleased that it had stopped raining here in Charlottesville.
God, it's raining.
It poured earlier in the day, and I thought, oh, this is never going to happen.
Yeah.
It was a deluge early in the day, and then it just cleared and dried out, and it was just a perfect evening. And, we had some people come in Beetlejuice attire, which was a lot of fun, and it was a really fun evening. And later next month, we're going to be screening A Beach Blanket Bingo, which we thought would be harkened back to a simpler, easier time and screen that. And then, one of my favorite films, which I don't think gets screened often enough, is American Graffiti. And I just think that's a really exceptional film.
It
and
is.
I thought we would visit that during the summer and take a look at that film again. So, we had food trucks out there, and there'll be some food trucks up at, not food trucks at Carter Mountain because they have food facilities up there. But, there were food trucks at X Park and, people buying food, drinking a little beer, having a little Hard Rock cider and having a great time. So it was really good.
Well, the festival itself, especially under your tutelage, has developed a reputation for screening films in non-traditional locations. Like I remember you were been at the Aquatic Fitness Center.
Yes, well, that was before my time. But they had a screening of Jaws back there, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you brought up the X Park because, for our listeners who haven't been there yet, you really should go. I mean, this is such, I think, kind of a perfect Charlottesville thing. It was an old woolen manufacturing plant, that space that closed. And X Park is just south of the downtown mall on 2nd Street. And it was just not being used for much. A couple of restaurants were there, Playon Theater, the late lamented Playon Theater had a space there. And then a few years ago, Brian Weimer and a few other people said, we got to use this space. And there's that outdoor interactive park now where you can pick up mallets and bang them against gongs. And they have events out there all the time. I saw No Wake out there a few weeks ago. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, and a lot of this is actually inspired by Beatrix Ost and Ludwig Hüttner, who are, I think, you know, sort of creative and artistic visionaries mm-hmm. here in our own community, mm-hmm. and have been supportive of this effort to turn the Ix into an art park and bring people together. And there have been really, in the last, I'd say, year and a half, some really exceptional sort of festivals down there. There's a music series that goes on. I think they just had a beer festival and tasting there yesterday.
Right.
A lot of really great community events that center around the arts.
And that's such a Charlottesville experience. As, hey, let's look at this kind of old, abandoned space, and let's make art out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm so glad that the film festival is a part of that. I want to talk a bit about sort of your life in the arts, and what's, you know, your early beginnings. You grew up in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Your early aspirations were in acting.
Well, actually, my earliest aspirations were in history. I majored in history at Rollins College. I got a degree in that and thought I actually might go on to teach history. Absolutely loved it. History, political science. As a young boy, I traveled up the East Coast on a summer and was very much into Civil War history. And I remember a special summer when I was 9 visiting Antietam and Spotsylvania Courthouse and the Wilderness and Fredericksburg and Newmarket. And who knew that I was going to end up, basically living here right in the midst of all of that, which is really, really fascinating. And, you know, every day I drive, I live out in Crozet, and I pass a sign that says this is where Stonewall Jackson's army marched on the way into the Shenandoah Valley. So all this history really intrigued me. Obviously, Jefferson, Monticello, Monroe, Adams, all being in this area, really, really fascinating to me. But I moved into, when I was in college, into acting. I really also enjoyed reading Shakespeare, and they were doing a production of Romeo and Juliet, and I thought I would actually audition for it. And was cast in the show. Got to sword fight, which was really cool, and I also
awesome.
Loved that.
Yeah.
And I started doing a play a year, and in my junior year at Rollins, a play I was not involved in, which was Equus, Pulitzer Prize winning play by Peter Schaefer. There were some problems with it. For people that are not familiar with this particular production, there is a nude scene in the play between a young man and a woman, complete nudity. But it's actually woven into the story. It's integral to the story. It's not gratuitous in any way, shape, or form. And it's actually beautiful about a young boy who has a horrific problem, and he ends up blinding these horses.
Right.
That's tied into religion and sexuality. And long story short, the play is recounted through the eyes of the psychiatrist who heals this young man, or tries to heal the man, and he says that in healing the young man, he's had to strip away from him all of the passions that make him who he is, and that the psychiatrist wishes that he cared that much about something, and not about, obviously, killing the horses, but deeper things that are going on within the young man. And the play ends with him as the boy recounts the scene, and of course where the nudity is, the psychiatrist comes and bundles the boy in a blanket and carries him off the stage. Yeah. Really beautiful scene. And there was a school lawyer who was also the town lawyer who took exception that there was going to be the nudity and went on to try and shut the play down.
Really?
And so I ended up leading a march of about 1,000 students on City Hall. And City Hall was breaking an old ordinance there by having a nude statue in front of it.
Uh-huh.
And basically all the books that we read, you know, in art that would have had a Rubens nude in it or any kind of depiction of nudity was also illegal according to the city ordinance that they were citing to shut the play down. And so, you know, put it mildly, all hell broke loose. And I ended up reading a petition to the city manager. We had news trucks down there. It was a lot of fun. It was all, you know, sort of a tempest in a teacup. But that being said, I really had an impact on me personally about the power of art to transform, and both from a political standpoint, but just the impact that it could have in galvanizing a community. And we won. It changed the face of the college. A lot of trustees ended up resigning for a while.
What college
Rollins College. The president didn't talk to me. About 4 years later, when I moved out to Los Angeles, he came up at an alumni event, gave me a bear hug, and said it was the best thing that ever happened to the college, because a lot of people that had been actually holding things up got off, new people came in, a lot of money was raised, the college went on this great trajectory, and he cited it all because of this little event that wow. happened. So to me, that was a really extraordinary event. I learned a lot from that, and I made a shift in saying that I really wanted to go into the arts, and I was very interested in acting, and ended up getting a second degree from Florida State University, a BFA in theater, and then went on at the FSU Oslo Conservatory for Actors Training to get my MFA in acting. And so, you know, that sort of told the story for me.
My guest, who's very early on a passionate activist for the arts, is Jody Kielbasa. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, heating oil and propane for your home or business, and the award-winning Markets of Tiger Fuel, with 6 area locations.
This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call with my guest, Jody Kielbasa. We were talking about your early days and what attracted you to the arts and how it became such a passion for you. So you mentioned after college that you went to Los Angeles.
Well, I did. I didn't sing and I didn't dance, so I didn't expect much of a career on the Broadway stage in New York City. And
right.
I decided I would move out to Los Angeles to ply my trade, so to speak.
So when was this? Place this for us in time.
It would have been 1986.
Okay.
1986. So I moved out to Los Angeles, and as I like to say, I was on a soap opera for a short time and waited a lot of tables.
Yes. Yes.
Which is what you did when you were out there and you were a struggling young actor. And
I lived out there at the same time. Yeah. Not as an actor, yeah. but as a struggling writer, and it was an interesting time and place to be in Los Angeles in the late 80s.
Well, for me, it was a very dynamic period in my life. I met a lot of people out there, having moved from Florida and having gone through, Florida's university systems there. There were a number of us who had moved out there around the same time and gravitated towards each other. I actually started an organization, which was like a networking organization of actors and creatives called the Florida Theater Connection. And it was a way for us to try and support each other by holding seminars and sometimes acting together. And, I mentioned I was on a soap opera for a while. I did some other work as well and spent a lot of times, as I said, to keep my head above water, waiting tables. And after about 2 years of doing that in 1988, along with a partner, Max Croft, I managed to raise the grand sum of $16,000
in 1988 dollars.
Yeah, to invest in a small theater that we would build. And we literally took over a storefront on Franklin Avenue, right under the Hollywood sign,
sure.
in a historic part of old Hollywood that was really not doing that well. It was kind of depressed. And knocked down some walls, and we built a small stage in there, and we built a 92-seat Equity Waiver Theater. That's a professional theater that has an agreement with Equity, have actors sort of work for less than the Equity sum, considerably less. But essentially, it was almost like a minor league for agents, producers, directors to come in and watch talent perform, and then hopefully it would be a step for their career into getting cast in television and film.
And how many Equity Waiver Theaters were there?
Oh, my goodness. There's close to, I would say, at that time, there were probably 250 to 300 Equity Waiver Theaters. Our theater developed one of the top reputations in a relatively short period of time. I think a lot of that had to do with the location. It was, literally right where the grid began.
Right.
Just below the Hollywood Hills.
Right.
We started attracting a lot of really great people. And at that point, that particular block exploded. We opened the theater. We started bringing people down late at night. And then a restaurant opened next to us. There was already another restaurant on the block. The Bourgeois Pig Coffee House opened up. Which, interestingly enough, the guy on Cheers who served the coffee, who loved Rachel, with the white blonde hair, he was hired out of that coffee shop by the creators of the show.
How about
that? Who used to serve coffee to them. And while they were developing the show and writing the show, they would meet at the Bourgeois Pig, and they developed a relationship and just hired him to be on that show.
And they said, by any chance, are you an actor?
Yeah, that's being in the right place at the right time.
So that was the Tamarind Theater.
That was the Tamarind Theater. Mm-hmm. And now it still operates, and, you know, 30 years later, as the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is an offshoot of Amy Poehler's, you know, troupe. And they do comedy there late night. I'm very proud that it still operates. And the Upright Citizens Brigade has done so well that they've opened up this huge compound on Sunset Boulevard. I just saw it when I was out there last year. And so they're operating two spaces now. But my Tamarind Theater, although it has another name now, and it's really Upright Citizens Brigade, still is alive and well and doing very well. And occasionally I'll go back and look at it. And the very same seats that I installed, my father, who was in his 70s, flew out and helped install these beautiful Art Deco theater seats with me on the platforms, you know, basically bolting them in and refinishing the seats. Those seats are still in that theater. While I was out there, I produced well over 100 plays, most of them new and original works, which was great. It was a great experience for me. And pretty much at that time, I stopped acting and stopped focusing on acting and really started learning how to become a producer. I really enjoy that. The sensibility of helping other creatives realize their dreams and their creative vision was something that I really enjoyed. Yeah. And I got a tremendous amount of creative work out of that. I still was being creative. I was assembling the team. I was influencing the productions, the look, the feel, the casting. But on top of that, I was learning the business end of it, which was raising the money, doing the marketing, the promotion, everything involved in running a live professional theater and trying to run basically a mom-and-pop business and keeping your head above the water in what is a remarkably competitive environment, not only with other theaters, but just try and run a small business. You know, fortunately for me, it got me out of waiting tables. I was able to make just enough, sort of just beyond subsistence level to do that. And I did that for about 7 years while I was out there and learned a tremendous amount from me. It was a very dynamic period. I got to work with a lot of amazing people. Sir John Neville came in and directed a play at my theater. I had the good fortune of meeting the renowned opera singer Renee Fleming a year ago at the University of Virginia, and we started chatting. And she said, "Well, what did you do?" And I told her about my theater, and she goes, "Oh my goodness, I studied with Charles Nelson Reilly at your theater," because Charles Nelson Reilly used to teach an acting class out of my theater.
How about
and
that?
So we had that in common. John Cusack's brother, Billy Cusack, did a play, and virtually every night for about, 2 months, John Cusack and Billy Zane and Jeremy Piven used to come down and hang out at our theater, and we would all empty into one of the restaurants with 30 or 40 people afterwards. Donnie Most came down from Happy Days.
Good
friend came down and did a play at my theater over the years. Well, one of my favorite evenings was the night that Warren Beatty showed up at my theater to see a production on Lee Atwater called Fixin' to Die, that George Firth, who wrote the book for Company, Stephen Sondheim's Company, and had been in a number of films over the years and was an accomplished sort of playwright as well and creative guy. He'd written this play on Lee Atwater, a one-man play, and one night Warren Beatty comes in because he's friends with George Firth with Annette Bening, who he had just started dating.
Sure.
And this is in a 92-seat theater. President Reagan came to my theater with 8 Secret Service members and Nancy Reagan one evening. Now imagine 8 Secret Service agents, the former President of the United States and the former First Lady sitting in a 92-seat theater.
Did they buy seats?
No, they did not. Long and short of it is that a young woman wrote a play there, and about 3 weeks into the rehearsal process, she came up to me and she said, "I need to talk to you." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "I'm going to be having a lot of pretty high-profile people attend." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because, I mean, I didn't know her, you know, really, other than her being the playwright, and why she would have all these people in the middle of Los Angeles come for her play."
Right.
And she said, "Well, my father used to be in the Reagan administration, so I used to play with Ron Jr. in the White House, So she said, "He's going to be coming, the president of the United States. the governor is going to be coming to the state of California again in this little 92-seat theater. And sure enough, they all came to see this play, which was remarkable, like I said, given the size of the house.
My guest, who is hobnobbing with the stars, is Jody Kielbasa, talking about his days as a theater producer in L.A. And I'm glad you brought this up, Jody, because, you know, I know I do some work at the theater here in town and at UVA, and I know a lot of, you know, young actors, and their feeling is like, okay, if I want to do, you know, if I want to do theater, I have to go to New York. If I want to do film and television, I have to go to L.A. And what a lot of people don't realize is what a strong and active, a dynamic theater scene is going on in Los Angeles. I mean, there's so many people there, actors and others who, you know, like maybe, you know, they're trying to break into TV, or they do, you know, they do occasional TV gig. But an awful lot of the work that's going on in L.A. is in theater.
Well, I that's very, very true. But I do think that today, I mean, I always encourage young actors to think of it as acting,
mm-hmm.
and not so much just, oh, I'm doing theater,
right.
or I'm doing television and film,
right.
but that you're acting, and you're acting in different mediums, and you have a number of different opportunities. And you will see today such crossover among these. I mean, some of the best work that is being done, period, is in television today. We
Absolutely.
Know this. It's
yeah.
phenomenal.
Yeah.
The storytelling that's going on is extraordinary. And you have film stars that are moving into mm-hmm. television because the ability to develop a character over time rather than in a two-hour time slot is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And they love that concept. You also have a lot of people that are, you know, making that leap onto the Broadway stage or in other regional theaters as well, because they want that opportunity to have that experience of actually acting before a live audience as well, which is an entirely different feeling.
Oh, it is.
And I think you should have a great deal of love and respect for all of those, and also recognize them as a necessity for keeping yourself employed on a consistent level. You know, one of the reasons why I chose originally not to move to New York is I kind of did the math in my head, and I thought, well, gosh, you know, if I went to New York, what would be an outstanding 30-year career? And I thought to myself, 8 Broadway shows.
Right.
8 Broadway shows in 30 years. And since I didn't sing and dance, and you know that the average Broadway show
uh-huh.
that is not a musical closes in less than 6 months,
right.
your time of employment might be less than a year
right.
out of those at that 30-year career.
Right.
And the rest of the time, you're going to be doing regional theater. You're going to leave your home in New York City to go do regional theater. Wonderful. I'm not in any way suggesting that's
yeah.
not a phenomenal type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I made, for me, the choice to move out to Los Angeles. It ended up leading me to my career today. I have absolutely no regrets. In fact, everything that I ended up doing, fortunately, not necessarily by design or by plan, but just fortunately for me, is informed where I am today, and happily for me. I've learned a lot along the way. I think even just, as I said, running this small professional theater that was essentially a mom-and-pop business, forced me to learn a lot of things that I might not normally have focused on, things about marketing and fundraising and PR work and speaking before audiences to basically sell the show,
mm-hmm.
Do all these things, working with creatives closely in a lot of areas that I did not have, you know, strong background in. I studied acting and spent a lot of less time focused on costuming and lights and sound and those things. But in running a small theater, you don't have that luxury. You have to be involved
to
in
everything.
Every aspect of it.
Yeah.
So at least indirectly, where I'm not expert in any of those things, I at least know a little bit about them, which has been helpful.
And my guest, who knows a little bit about everything, is Jody Kielbasa. But I want to get back on that track, because I find that part of your story really so inspiring. You know, personally, I have an interest in trying to figure out how to keep art in your life. So, you know, I admire the fact that you've made it your career. And I think this is important for a lot of, especially young people, young college graduates, to hear. You know, they've got their, you know, they've gone to UVA, they've got their, degree in acting, and they're not quite sure what to do next or where to go next. And I think your story shows us that you don't stop learning. You just go out there and you keep on doing new things. So you started the Tamarind Theater. You ran it until what was it, about 95.
And then I turned that over to a business partner that I was working with and mm-hmm. moved back to Florida,
right.
Sarasota, Florida, where I'd actually trained at the FSU Oslo Conservatory. I was brought back as a development director for the conservatory and did that for about 18 months when I was hired to work as a managing director of American Stage, which is a professional theater in St. Petersburg, Florida. Did that for a year, was a producing artistic director there for a year. Which was a great period for me as well to be involved in professional theater. Did some great shows, including a Shakespeare in the Park that was done as a musical, which was great fun. And was hired by a board in 1999 to start a film festival.
Right.
They had a vision. It was basically a board of community volunteers, and they had a vision to start an international film festival. And in Sarasota, there had been a sort of a celebrated French film festival that had gone on for, about 7 or 8 years and had some great success and then just sort of imploded when the French pulled out, Unifrance pulled out, and kind of tough to seriously run a French film festival without them being involved on some level. And
so, at that point, why you? Why Jody Kielbasa?
Sometimes it's about being in the right place at the right time. This board had a great idea, and they really had no concept of how to get this off the ground, which I understand. I mean, they were community volunteers. They weren't experts in running film festivals or the arts or anything like that. They just had a vision that a festival, not only because they loved film, but they thought as an artistic organization would drive cultural tourism mm-hmm. for Sarasota, and they mm-hmm. thought it would be a great idea, and they wanted to see that happen. And of course, every group like that says, "Oh, we're going to be the next Cannes, and we're going to we're going to be the next Sundance," which I immediately said, "Stop saying that! Please do not repeat that anymore." That was very difficult to get them off of that. But long story short, they needed somebody to come in and organize this and pull it together. And so I agreed to do that. And this was where a lot of the earlier skills that I had learned, because I had no choice. I had to learn them to run this small mom-and-pop business. And mm-hmm. then becoming a producing artistic director at American Stage started to come into play. I basically was thrown into a situation where we were starting an organization from scratch. And by scratch, I mean by scratch. I was given $1,000 and told to open a bank account. I had to get an office donated. This is 1999.
Right.
I wasn't particularly good at computers anyway, but nonetheless, I had to have one. So we got one. I had to get the stationery printed. And they wanted a festival up and running in 5 months, which was absolutely nuts. I mean, there was no organization. There was no money. There was nothing. And I ended up on using my own credit card. And funding it myself, I flew back to Los Angeles, and I met with some friends that I had actually opened my theater with, the Tamarind mm-hmm. Theater, and they had produced the very first production, and one of them was a woman named Deb Scott Spera, who had acted in the very first production of the Tamarind Theater and now had gone on to become an executive at Showtime. And I said, help. I need some help. I need a couple of premieres, and I need some star power to launch this festival. And so she went out on a limb and promised me two films. They were Showtime movies, and there were some people that looked askance at me opening a film festival with Showtime films and not, film
right,
per se.
Right.
But, one of the films was Marciano, and it starred a young Jon Favreau. And not really many people knew who Jon Favreau was at the time.
Right.
Jon Favreau, yeah.
It's a movie about Rocky Marciano.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. I remember this.
And, some people sort of knew him from that movie with Vince Vaughn, Swingers.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you go and see Swingers, you will see the Tamarind Theater in the opening shots of
really?
Swingers. And that whole area that the Swingers hung out in was my block, the Tamarind block there, the Franklin Avenue block.
Oh, I'll have to go back and rewatch it.
And a couple of watering holes that they visited, which are all in that area, in the Los Feliz area. So very, very cool and very fun.
Nice.
Something I was very proud of at the time. But anyway, Jon Favreau came in. Jonathan Silverman came in. Mm-hmm. Samantha Mathis came mm-hmm. in. Marley Matlin came in. So we had an Academy Award winning actress coming in for another film that was of these two films they gave. So I went, you know, this was good news. And I flew back and I told my board, look, well, you know, we got a whole different concept here. We're going to have a film festival in 5 months, but you're absolutely nuts if you think we can pull together a full-fledged film festival in 9 months. So we're going to screen 8 films. I'm going to do 2 premieres. We're going to fly in a lot of these, you know, movie stars and directors and producers. We're going to screen 2 foreign films, international films, what have you in this, and then 4 independent films. That's what we're going to do. We're going to have a big gala, and then we're going to live to fight another day. And we did that, and it came off extraordinarily well. We had all the people, and Natalie Cole was in a movie. She came as well. I mean, it was really? Absolutely a great launch. People got very jazzed by this concept. And the next year, I was able to double the budget. I think that for the budget so that first year was like $150,000. No, we raised about $150,000. The budget went up to about $300,000. And we ended up having 64 films. And John Voight came in. Jenna Rollins.
Went from 8 films to 64.
Yeah.
Wow.
John Voight came in. Jenna Rollins came in. Brooke Shields came in, who was in a film that year. I think more people were excited about Brooke Shields coming in than John Voight and Jenna Rollins combined, which was extraordinary to me. But I guess, you know, what can I say? But the festival started to really get energy mm-hmm. and it got bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where, you know, I think year five, we were honoring Richard Dreyfuss at the Ritz-Carlton in front of 700 people. We had about 175 films at that point, incredible size and energy and great films coming in. And finally, by 2007... 2008, which was my last
Your
year.
Last four,
it was
right.
the 10th year anniversary. We screened 226 films. We had over 45,000 in attendance. That year, we opened with a film that I produced, actually, called The Deal. Mm-hmm. It starred William H. Macy and Meg Ryan mm-hmm. and Jason Ritter and LL Cool J and Elliot Gould, which had premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. And with a producing partner, Kerry Nakamoto, I helped raise about $2.5 million. Towards this project. So we opened the Sarasota Film Festival with that film. And we also had Leah Volman in. We had Charlize Theron. We had Stanley Tucci, Steve Buscemi. I mean, just remarkable people coming in around the film. Over the course of the 10 years, the B-52s had played a rap party of Montreal, played the Brazilian Girls, played... Aerosmith came there one
sure.
time and played a set, which was pretty cool. So we had a lot of great musical acts, a lot of big events, and a lot of incredible films over the course of that time. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be hired by the University of Virginia.
Well, we'll get to that. You set the stage for your move to Virginia in 2009. My guest is Jody Kilbasa, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, heating oil and propane for your home or business, and the award-winning Markets of Tiger Fuel, with 6 area locations.
It is the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. This is Sean McCord, subbing for Rick Moore. My guest this morning is Jody Kilbasa, who has set the stage right up until 2009. So you launched from essentially nothing, this extremely successful film festival in Sarasota, in your home state of Florida. And then you find out about this this opening at the Virginia Film Festival. So,
well, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And the story is obviously more complicated than that. You know, I think that, you know, over the years, as that festival grew, there was a tremendous amount of support from that community, and mm-hmm. it grew from, as I mentioned, about $150,000 budget the first year to $2.25 million budget, and basically me, and then eventually another person to, you know, 9 other full-time staff members, a huge outreach and education program, and having a large impact in the community, and the tourism dollars that it was bringing to the community were extraordinarily as well. But like anything, when it grows and it grows and it grows, the expectations also grow along with that. And, you know, I had hoped to do certain things with it. The board had other visions. And at that point, it was time for me to step aside, which was good because I'd done it for 10 years. And, you know, I think that whenever you do anything for 10 years, 20 years, whatever the case may be, everything has a shelf life. And it was good for a different vision to come in at that point. And I am proud as my other theater in Los Angeles continues under a new vision and new leadership, and it's not what it started out to be, that the Sarasota Film Festival still continues to have a national impact. You know, not long after when I stepped away from Sarasota, this position here in Virginia came to my attention. And, you know, I thought to myself, wow, what a phenomenal opportunity. You know, over the years, I had traveled through Virginia, not spent a lot of time in it, but I always thought it was just flat out one of the most beautiful states every time I'd come by. I didn't know much about Charlottesville. And
that was going to be my question. What did you know about Charlottesville the Virginia Film Festival?
I really didn't. I knew the areas around Charlottesville, but I'd never been to Charlottesville. And so you can imagine, I remember flying in here, and it was in March for an interview, and I flew in, as you do when you enter, you know, Charlottesville Albemarle Airport, you know, low over the mountains, and, you know, there were no leaves on the trees, but everything was green at the time, and I just was stunned at how beautiful it was, and you know, as I drove through the city into the university, I was absolutely blown away at just how stunning it was. And, you know, for me, it's been really exceptional because you talked about learning your entire life. And this was a new opportunity for me to come into a community. And in this case, not just the community of Charlottesville, but the community of the University of Virginia, surrounded by exceptional people that have really spent their lives learning and teaching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I sort of half kiddingly, and I mean only half kiddingly, say this, but it's true that every day I'm in a room and I'm usually the dumbest person in the room. But
I know that feeling.
I learn something every day in every discussion and panel and meeting or from a student or a faculty member or a staff member at UVA. It's extraordinary. And it's extraordinary even living in this community, how just smart people are and how engaged they are in the process of learning. And so for me to come to this community and you know, I will say that there was a difference between living here and the people in this community than the people in Sarasota. I'm not saying that Sarasota doesn't have its share of smart people, but instantly when I got here, I recognized that people really were passionate about the films here and very passionate, even more so, about the discussion after the films.
Yes.
They really, and they didn't want to just hear about, oh, I made it and I shot it on this camera and then, you know, so-and-so was dating so-and-so out in Hollywood. they really, really want to drill down deeply into the subject matter of what the films are about. And this is what they care about. And they love it when you bring in a big Hollywood star, but if you don't, they're fine too, talking to the filmmakers, which is fabulous, because suddenly it wasn't about having to bring stars in. Now, we bring in a lot of stars, and we've had some great success doing that, and we'll continue to do that, and we'll continue to focus on when we can bring people in that can add to that conversation, that have that kind of high Hollywood profile, we will bring them in. But it's also great to bring in the filmmakers that are just discussing about why they wanted to make this film and what the subject matter was, or to do a documentary and bring the subject in that the documentary is about and engage the community in a dialogue, or to create awareness for a lot of, I mean, we've partnered over the years with a lot of social service organizations like Arc of the Piedmont or Region 10, other cultural institutions to create a dialogue around whatever needs additional awareness, whatever that subject matter is. And that's been a really great privilege for me.
So, as you know, I've been a longtime volunteer at the Film Festival. So I'm talking to Jody Kilbasa, the director of the Virginia Film Festival and UVA vice provost for the arts. I've been a longtime volunteer at the festival, and one of the things that has struck me, as you hit the nail on the head, is the discussions after the films.
Yeah.
Sure, we love to see the stars, but people here seem less star-struck as they, you're exactly right. They want to talk about not just the deals that went into making this film, but what was the film about?
Right.
And what were the subjects? And, you know, you could bring in, because we have the university here, you know, you can bring in a lot of subject experts, either teach at the university or have an association with it. And people are very engaged. And it's, in fact, it's really hard sometimes getting the conversation to end after a film. Mm-hmm. You know, people have sat there for 2 hours or so and watched the film, and they just want to sit around and talk about it. With the guests and with the panelists. And I've been in situations, you've seen it too, you say, I'm so glad you're enjoying talking about this film, but we gotta
move it out to the lobby to take that conversation out there.
Yeah,
but you know, it's also great because I think it's not stuffy. And for me, I do think that I am proud that I think one of the changes that I've helped implement the last 7 years of the festival is opening it up to our community at large and making it very, very accessible. We've worked really, really hard to do that. You know, there are a lot of people that might not go hear a lecture about alcohol and drug abuse or, I don't know, about sexuality or whatever the case may be, but suddenly a film opens up that opportunity for them to find it more accessible, and then they'll stay for the dialogue afterwards. And so we try and set that up all the time, and we found that our audience has expanded. I think the year before I got here, the audience, the attendance was at roughly 11,000. This past year, we topped 32,000. We were screening about 60 to 65 films. Now we're up to around 140. We've increased the number of venues. The engagement within the community with social service groups and cultural institutions has also grown exponentially. So that we're reaching a lot of different people. And I think that for me, what was really, really important is to say that although this is presented by the University of Virginia, this is Charlottesville's festival.
Right.
And it's even beyond Charlottesville's festival. It is the state film festival for the Commonwealth of Virginia. This was founded by Governor Gerald Baliles 29 years ago as a means of throwing a spotlight on filmmaking and the art of film here in the Commonwealth of Virginia to attract filmmakers to come here to actually shoot their films in the Commonwealth and to create more revenue for the economy as a result of that, and decided that it should be housed at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville because Charlottesville is a great community for this, and also because the University of Virginia could add that sort of creative and intellectual firepower to the actual festival itself, which I think it has done and will continue to do so. So I'm very pleased at the growth of the festival. And I think that, you know, part of it, which I hope in time will begin to happen, is this is really, you know, the top or one of the top regional film festivals on the East Coast of the U.S. and certainly for the Mid-Atlantic. And, you know, my hope in time is that stature will continue to increase. I don't want it to become so large that it just swallows Charlottesville. I'm not interested in a South by Southwest kind of circumstance, which I think is a bit of a cluster from time to time anyway. but I want it to be uniquely Charlottesville, that it reflects who we are as a community, while expanding that discussion of ideas, which is so important. And ultimately, that's what storytelling is about. That's what filmmaking is about, is sharing stories of other people. And if in doing so, we can open up a little window on other people's lives, other people's communities, our own community, when we're screening films about topics and pressing needs within Charlottesville, and also other cultures, then we're really doing a great service for everyone, I think.
I agree. My guest, Jody Kielbasa, the executive director, artistic director. What's your full title?
I'm just the director.
Just the director. Just the director of the Virginia Film Festival.
Yes.
But also the vice provost for the arts at UVA. So you've been able to, you talked about the relationship between the community and the university that has helped the film festival. You sort of hinted at the relationship with the Virginia Film Office. The governor's office for bringing more productions into town, and there's also a building relationship with the Library of Congress. Many people don't realize the presence that the Library of Congress has here in Virginia.
Well, you know, that's very true, Sean. You're the first one who, you know, over coffee, I think, when we first met 7 years ago, said, you know, there's this incredible facility up in Culpeper, Virginia. You've got to go check it out. And I think I was there about 7 months after I got here, so not too long. I had to get the first festival underway. And I went up to Culpeper, Virginia, and as you had told me, hidden away in Mount Pony, actually in this mountain was the original Oh, I don't know what it was. It was like a bank where you kept the gold bullion in case there was a nuclear attack.
It was an underground bunker where they kept it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, this is like Dr. Strangelove. But right. Sure enough, five stories underneath the mountain existed these vaults where today it was decommissioned. The Library of Congress's motion picture sound archives are stored there. And it's unbelievable. I can't even begin to describe it. But go to the Library of Congress, Culpeper,
the
Motion
Packard,
Picture
the Packard,
South, Packard Campus,
right,
and
yeah.
Look it up, because, you know, you can go in there and, you know, they have the master prints for Gone with the Wind, and you can't take it with you, and it mm-hmm. happened one night, and Mr. Mm-hmm. Smith goes to Washington. They are preserving and conserving film. You'll go in and you'll see labs where they're taking scalpels and they're painstakingly restoring silent films over there. You'll go in and you'll see a record that is shattered in 1,000 pieces, and they're using lasers to recreate the sound grooves, to recreate the original sound of the recording from the 1920s or 30s or whenever the case may be. It's an extraordinary, and it is an archive of presidential debates, political speeches. The gentleman whose name escapes me, who's recorded sound all over New York City, sound of pigeons, of the subways, of just whatever, different boroughs in New York City. It's got everything there. It is a treasure trove, and we've developed a relationship with them every year during the festival. They also have a national film registry, and every year, by virtue of Congress, a congressional act, 20 films are designated cultural treasures,
right,
and added to the National Film Registry. And so the festival each year celebrates between 3 and 5 films by screening them that have been named to this National Film Registry in partnership with the Library of Congress. A couple years ago with the Miller Center, for instance, we screened All the President's Men, marking the 40th anniversary of Watergate, which also happens to be on the National Film Registry. And Woodward and Bernstein came in a moderated conversation with Governor Gerald Blyles, which was just extraordinary.
It was an amazing night.
Yeah. So these are some of the kind of fun things we have. But, you know, I don't do this alone. You know, I have a wonderful programmer, Wesley Harris, mm-hmm. who's part of this, a wonderful staff led by Jenny Mays, our managing director. And, you know, there's a lot of work in pulling the festival together. What is so fortunate is we just have this amazing community here in Charlottesville that loves the festival, supports the festival, turns out in droves for the festival. You know, we love doing it. It's a labor of love in every way, shape, and form.
My guest is talking, who's laboring with love, is Jody Kielbasa, the director of the Film Festival and also UVA Vice Provost for the Arts. So I want to spend our last few minutes talking about that, talking about those additional set of responsibilities and what you've been able to do with that and bring to town. I'm holding in my hand, thank you for bringing it in this morning, the University of Virginia Arts, what do you call this?
It's our arts magazine, yeah.
Arts magazine.
And it is a snapshot of everything that's going on in the arts at the University of Virginia in a given semester. We publish this twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really extraordinary. You know, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, I would like everybody to leave with today, that our listeners out there, is that, you know, sometimes there's, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's that university. I don't know if I can go on the grounds or whatever. Go to the arts website. Go to the homepage of the University of Virginia and click at the top on arts and go directly to our website. It is extraordinary, the offerings there, whether it's going to the Fralin Museum of Art at the University of Virginia. Friday night, I was at the Kluge Roo Aboriginal Art Collection, which is the finest collection of Aboriginal art in the United States, and it's over on Pantops, and it's free to go see it. And they bring in Aboriginal artists all the time for programs and exhibitions, performances. That's fabulous. The Fralin Museum of Art, almost every day there's a school bus, well, actually 3 or 4 or 5 of kids that are being dropped off to tour that incredible museum, and that is free and open to the public as well. The musical offerings alone would just absolutely blow your mind at the the University of Virginia, whether it's our choral groups or our symphony that's playing, piano recitals, you name it, they're going on all the time. There's the Virginia Film Festival. Of course, the Festival of the Book is part of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, right, but also part of UVA as well. There's the Heritage Theater Festival, which is going to open in June this year with the Pirates of Penzance. They're just doing five great plays, and that is Charlottesville's only true professional theater company. And they are there every summer doing great plays. This year, if you've got kids, they're doing Charlie Brown. Just really great on Pirates of Penzance is a wonderful family show. So bring your families, bring your kids if you want to introduce them to some excellent theater. There's a parking garage there. It's not hard to park. So there's really so much going on all the time there that's open and accessible. And you know what? A lot of it is free. And what a great opportunity for families to introduce their kids not only to a university setting, which I'm sure most of you or all of you aspire that your children go on to university, but it allows them a comfort level. This is what a university looks like. This is what a university is. This is what it feels like to be on the grounds of a great university. And the arts is an easy introduction to that, and it's free, and it's accessible, and it's open to all.
One other thing you launched, Jody, was the presidential speaker for the arts.
Yes, that's true. We launched 2 years ago with Tina Fey, who's a UVA alum, and she came in and spoke free, open to the community, before 6,000 plus Charlottesville residents, students, faculty in the amphitheater at UVA. And then a year ago, we had Kevin Spacey in, who spoke at John Paul Jones Arena in front of over 8,000 people as well. And again, free and open to the public.
Those are two fantastic events.
Yeah, not bad. So we do these things all the time. And again, the public is invited, and we actually very much want that. I see the arts as being one of the greatest bridges that the university can build to our community that goes both ways. It's great for our students and faculty to get out of the community, and it's so wonderful when the community comes on the grounds of the university to experience what we have to offer.
So come around UVA, pick up the Arts Magazine. You can't miss it. It's big and it's beautiful.
We have an online version of it, which you can access right on our arts website at the University of Virginia as well.
Yeah, I believe that's arts.virginia.edu.
That's right, arts.virginia.edu.
And Virginia Film Festival will be returning in November. What are the dates again, Joe?
November 3rd through the 6th. And we announce, I think October 2nd this year.
Okay.
So, yes.
All right. And you can keep up with that at virginiafilmfestival.org. Thank you. I want to be sure to get that right. Jody, thank you for coming by. You've been such a good friend of the show. I'm glad that we had this full opportunity to talk about everything that you've done and that you're continuing to do for the community. I hope to have you back here in November to do our annual film festival show.
Well, I look forward to it. And Sean, thank you so much for everything you do to promote the arts here in our community of Charlottesville. Thanks.
Well, the town's been good to me, and it's been good to all of us. This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.